Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Everything Iconic with me, Danny Pellegrino. We'll be back later this week on Everything Iconic to recap all of the Vanderpump Rules and Real Housewives of New Jersey goodness. But for now, I have an interview with Melora Hardin. Now, Melora Hardin is an actor you probably will recognize from The Office. She played Jan Levinson-Gould on that show. She was also in The Bold Type, one of my favorites. And she's appeared in so many countless movies. Things like 27 Dresses, the Hannah Montana movie, 17 again, The Hot Chick. She's been in so many things. Also, she was originally cast in the Back to the Future movies. She had a two-picture deal and then was replaced when the original actor, Eric Stoltz, who was supposed to play the Marty McFly role, he was let go and they brought in Michael J. Fox. And Melora was also let go because she was taller than Michael J. Fox. And so the studio replaced her along with Eric Stoltz. So it's a really fascinating story. And so I'm excited for you all to hear it. I talked to Melora. She's got a new movie out called Clock that's going to be premiering on Hulu April 28th with Diana Agron. But we get into so much of her filmography. It's really a wild ride if you go to her IMDb page. So I hope you enjoy this chat with Melora Hardin. Hope you enjoy as much as I did. Here is Melora Hardin.
Hi. Hi. Michael Scott, this is Jan Levinson-Gould.
Just Jan Levinson.
No Gould?
No. Thank you very much for meeting with us. Have you been waiting long?
No, not long.
Good.
Jan, what happened?
Michael.
Is Gould dead?
Michael, we got divorced, okay? I'm so sorry. Excuse
you're
me.
Kidding me.
You know her from The Office as Jan Levinson, formerly Jan Levinson-Gould. I, of course, love The Bold Type. I was such a huge fan of that show. She's got a new movie called Clock that's premiering on Hulu April 28th. Melora, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Melora, I'm great. And looking through your IMDb page is insane. Like, have you ever gone to it and just marveled at sort of all of the places you've been as an actor?
Oh, I'm not sure that I've done that, but maybe I'll do that now.
It is a wild ride. For people who are not familiar, I'm going to do the absolute best I can because I'm looking through it and I'm like, I got to talk about that. I got to ask her about that movie. I got to ask her about that TV show. So I'm going to do my best to get to everything. But of course, I'm going to miss things because it's so incredibly vast. Do you have a favorite credit? That might be a stupid question, but
I can't say I have a favorite credit. But you know what's funny is I will say that I can probably count on, well, maybe not two hands, but I almost just two hands. And I've been doing this now as of June 29th, the same job for 50 years.
Wow.
There are not many people that can say that. Most people change jobs every 10 years or something, right? I mean, it's really rare to find someone that's been doing their job basically their whole life.
And but, especially in this career where longevity is rare, it's hard.
Right.
What do you attribute to the fact that you've been able to work in an industry where it's not always the case?
First, let me answer your first question, which is just that I can count on two hands the ones that are probably the highlights for me creatively as an artist. And a lot of them are live. So a lot of them include, you know, plays that I did and, you know, things like that. However, there is one movie that I would call a tribute that is highlighted that has yet to come out that right now we're submitting to festivals called Golden Vanity. It's a one woman movie. It's, as far as we know, the first and only one woman movie ever. I'm hoping that the world will get to see that at some point. But it's a really weird little quirky, culty, kind of dark, tragic, you know, wonderful little movie that I hope the world will get to see.
And you're the one woman in it.
And I'm the one woman. Yes. Oh, and so that's really, really fun. I think that what I would attribute to having such a long career and is a lot of things. One is I would say I had amazing parents. They both are actors. They really taught me my craft. They taught me how to be a professional. They took care of me. They guided me. I also have, very, very lucky that went through my childhood and then my teen years and then into my young adulthood and was still attractive. And like some people are really, really cute when they're little, but then they're not so cute going through their teen years. And then they're not so cute as an adult or the other way around, you know? That's just something that I was blessed with, like that I just got to like kind of go through those stages in a way that worked for being on camera. And then I think having incredible life coach and, you know, who, and husband and friends who like help me continue to go towards the things that really float my boat and turn me on opportunities to be creative. And I think that I'm focused on that. Like I'm focused on the art and the joy, you know.
You've been in so many different projects. Is there a scene partner or someone that you've acted alongside that you would say is the best person that you've gotten to act alongside? Does that make sense?
Wow. Gosh.
Or one or two, or people so that sort many. Of come to mind.
I would say all the actors on Transparent. I loved working with Amy Landecker, with Jeffrey Tambor, with Gabby Hoffman, with Jay Duplass, with Alexandra Billings, just incredibly gifted actors. Steve Carell was incredible to work with. Amazing at tossing the ball back and forth.
The two of you together. So, I mean, come on. Yeah. Truly my favorite part of The Office was anytime Jan was on there.
Yeah.
And I know I'm skipping around a bunch, but since you brought up Steve Carell, I have to ask about that. The dinner party episode of The Office is widely regarded as probably the best episode of The Office. And it's really centered around you and the Michael Scott character. And specifically, I wanted to ask about the scene where you put on your former assistant's music and you start dancing around. And I wondered, how rehearsed was that dance? And anything you could tell me about maybe that specific moment of the episode?
Yeah, no, actually, it is a very specific moment of the episode. And I am a dancer. So for me too, I was very, very specific in my own mind that I wanted to be just a little off the beat. I wanted to be a little bit like kind of just too much in the reverie of the memory of Hunter being her, you know, probably in my mind, she kind of awakened his sexual journey. And I feel like, you know, the sort of younger man, older woman of it all, and just the inappropriateness of her just going into that reverie. I think she's not really even, it's not even about the music. So she's kind of off the beat and, you know, making everyone uncomfortable.
And trying to twirl with Jim. Yeah. There's that moment that just kills me.
That just came to me in the moment. That was just like a moment that didn't even, that was not planned. That just came.
It's so good. It also must be so strange because that show, I just got off a tour, and every time I'm traveling, I don't have cable. I normally stream things and watch stuff that way. But whenever I'm traveling in a hotel room, I'm putting on the TV, and without fail, no matter what time of the day, The Office, Modern Family, they're always airing. Those are the two shows that I find in a hotel room on multiple different channels, which must be good for residuals, hopefully, but also must be weird that no matter where you go, even if you don't, if you're not someone who has cable, you're going to see that on peripherally. That must be strange.
Yes, it really is incredible to be a part of a show that has become as iconic as it has. And the character that I play has become as iconic as she has. I worked with Dick Van Dyke once on his show that his son wrote and starred in called Diagnosis Murder in the 80s, I guess. And what a, you know, just it. When you meet someone like that, and I, of course, at that moment in my time, wouldn't have known that I was going to go on to be sort of iconic in my time in a way that he's iconic in his time. And he was so generous. I mean, how many times he'd been asked about Mary Poppins? How many times? And he was just, yes, it was just wonderful. And Julie Andrews was wonderful. And just, he couldn't have been more gracious. And I thought, oh yeah, that's the way to be, you know?
Yeah. I think for fans of a show like The Office, it's so comforting and it gets people through. I've binged the series multiple times and I think shows like that really get people through tough times. I tend to go to it when I'm sick or recovering from something or whatever it is. And it's a warm hug. And I think those shows are so important. Right now I'm loving Abbott Elementary. And it just, when I put that on, those sitcoms have a weird way of kind of feeling good when you need them to the most.
Yeah.
I mentioned the bold type and also great acting. Did you get a chance to see Megan Fahey on The White Lotus?
Oh my God. Are you kidding? I'm so proud of her. She's so amazing. I know.
That scene on the beach, so I think it was the last episode or something.
I know.
I mean, some of the best acting I've seen. And as a bold type fanatic, I was so happy because I think bold type fans knew how amazing all of you were, she's but to then special. See it on that platform was so exciting.
Yeah. No, she's super special. And I knew it the minute that I started working with her and the minute I met her. And she really shines on that show. She really does. And she basically can go to the moon if she'd like to.
Right.
It's kind of like wherever she wants to go, she's going.
So good. I think she's just incredibly talented. It was so, so wonderful.
And a wonderful person too. Like just what a special young lady.
Were you happy with the way that show sort of recently ended? Were you happy with the sort of arc and the way it ended? I loved it so much.
I loved it. I loved the show. I think it was really saying good things to women. Mm-hmm. I loved my character of Jacqueline Carlisle because she was really, she was showing women that a woman of power can be kind and have integrity and not be cutting off her young employees at the knees, and that there's not always, you know, backstabbing and competition. It actually, you know, she can be challenging. She can be forceful at times. She can have expectations, but she's kind and she's reasonable and she's fair. And, you know, and so that was a really important, and that came off the heels of Transparent because I was so grateful to be a part of a show that was doing such good things for the trans community and really kind of, opening people's eyes to that trans people are just people. And really, Transparent was really a family show more than it was anything. It was really about a family. And it was about this journey of this particular family. And I really thought that was very, very special. And so I really thought the next thing I'd do, I want it to be meaningful. I want it to do something good in the world, you know? Not that I don't think just laughter, like on The Office, is doing good in the world, but I really, it was important to me. And so I love that about the bold type. I love seeing the young girls supporting one another and, you know, holding one another up like that. I was very pleased with the show. I think it would have gone on longer had it not been for COVID. I think the show was really special. And I think that the young ladies who star in the show will look back on that time and maybe they don't have quite as much perspective as I have because I've been here a little longer on Earth, to know that it really is a special show. It's a special show and it's saying special things and quite modern and really kind of a little bit ahead of the curve. We were talking about sort of some pretty big deal things that were like about the Me Too kind of thing with my character in particular before Me Too even happened. You know, there were many things like that with the show that we were a little ahead of the curve. So it was a special show.
I remember watching the pilot and being so blown away by it because you get all that sort of like rom-com-y, frothy, like beautiful wardrobe and all of that kind of stuff that we love from TV and movies. But you almost as an audience and this was on me, but as an audience, you're almost expecting like The Devil Wears Prada, where the boss is going to be that sort of Meryl Streep-esque figure, mm-hmm. which she was brilliant in that. But you expect that from your character. And with the young women in the show, you expect them at some point to be kind of combating each other. And I thought it was so revolutionary to really have that core. I think I had heard on Friday Night Lights the creators and the cast talking about the coach and his wife dynamic, and they never wanted to separate that. And they wanted that, they wanted to showcase a great marriage and healthy marriage. And I felt with the young women, or with all the women in The Bold Type, that they held on to that relationship dynamic in such a beautiful, brilliant way. That I just thought was great.
It's so great. That is what we were going for. So I'm glad that resonated with you.
Laura, see, this is so hard. You just have so much I want to talk about. Okay. I got to ask you, one of my all-time favorite movies is Back to the Future. And there's this fact that has now been revealed that you were actually originally cast in Back to the Future as, let's see, it was as Jennifer Parker alongside Eric Stoltz. Eric Stoltz was replaced by Michael J. Fox into filming. And then producers had decided, I suppose, that you were, that you were too tall for Michael J. Fox, which is insane. And so you were no longer in the movie. And I can only imagine how devastating that'd be at 17 years old. So can you talk to me a little bit about that? How much did you film, and how did you feel? I mean,
yeah. It was a 2-picture deal. I was 17. I had just turned down a soap opera that wanted me to be on, like, I think it was Days of Our Lives or something. I don't even remember, but it was a big soap opera and they wanted me to do it. And I had really been like, no, that's not what I'm doing. That's not what I'm doing with my career. And this was just felt like a giant thing. It was a giant thing. And we had done some publicity stills. I had been on the set. Eric had already started working. And I got a call from Bob Gale and Bob Zemeckis, and probably the most beautiful bouquet of flowers I've ever gotten, except when my husband proposed to me, which was more beautiful. Where they were just, it was so hard for them, you know, to tell me that they, and I'll tell you what's really fascinating, what I have since learned. Somebody wrote a book about this, about Back to the Future. And I think it just came out last year, but when I was doing the interview with the guy about it, he discovered that it was not Bob Zemeckis and not Bob Gale, which is why now looking back on that phone conversation, they were but kind of flummoxed. They didn't have anything to tell me. Like, they were just like, we love you so much. We think you're so amazing. It was the female executives. So this would have been what, 1984, 1985, something like that. The female executives thought it emasculated their lead character for him to have a girlfriend that's taller than he is. Ugh. The men could care less. They were like, who cares? That is, and when people say, like, we're still so stuck and we haven't done anything and nothing's happened, I want to say, we've come a long way, baby.
Yeah.
You would never hear female executives today saying that. You would never, ever hear female executives today saying that. And I don't blame the female executives either in 1984, because I'll tell you, they were working in a man's world and they thought that they were doing the thing that was right for their male lead. And I get it that their mind was disorganized around the inappropriateness of that. And so I give them also space for that, but it is really quite extraordinary that's where it came from.
Were you ever able to watch the movie? I would have been able to watch it.
I was able to watch the movie. Yeah, of course.
Oh my God.
If I had done that, I would have not done The Office. And, you know, there's no way I would have done The Office, because The Office was, I auditioned for it. It was a guest star, possible recurring character. If I'd done Back to the Future, I would have been doing other things. That's not to say I would have been doing different things. I don't know what I would have been doing, but I certainly would have been doing The Office.
Well, it really does go to show you that it's hard in the moment sometimes when you're facing rejection or your life path is going on a different way than you maybe anticipated. But I always at least find that everything does work out how it's supposed to. It's just hard to realize that in the moment.
Yeah, I think it does. I think it does. And I think even if it, even if you don't like it, there's always a lesson. There's always a lesson in stuff, right? And if you can embrace that, I mean, my incredible coach talks about how he loves breakdowns because with a breakdown, if you don't align yourself with the breakdown, there is a breakthrough that can happen. You can't have a breakthrough without a breakdown. You need a breakdown to have a breakthrough, you know? And so I think that's really a wonderful way to think about it. It's like, we all have to have breakdowns sometimes, and we all do. And that was sure, for sure, 100% a breakdown for me at the moment. And, and I did, you know, I did, I pulled myself through with the help of my parents, and you know, I was still living at home, and I was, you know, just graduating high school, or just graduated high school or something. And, you know, I got back up on the horse, as my dad would say, get back on the pony.
I'm a big believer too. And I don't, I guess some people would call it karma or balance, but I think life always kind of balances out how it's supposed to. So I try to remind myself, like, if I'm going through a tough time, on the other side of that, there'll be a good time.
Right.
Because the world sort of balances.
Well, when one door closes, other doors do open. You just have to be open to seeing them.
We have to take a quick break here. We'll be back with so much more from Melora Hardin. As always, you can find these interviews over on the YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/Danny Pellegrino and the number one. You can also find me on social media at Danny Pellegrino on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Or head on over to the Patreon page if you want those bonus episodes where I recap Sex and the City. Otherwise, we'll be back later this week with recaps of all of our Bravo goodness. But for now, we will take a break and we'll be back with much more from Melora Hardin. And thank you to Acast. Okay, so Patrick Swayze was your dance teacher. Tell me everything.
Yes,
you were a child. You were, I guess, 13. I was reading, and he was your. Yeah, tell me about it.
He was my first jazz teacher. I was a very serious ballerina. His mother was a ballet teacher out in, I don't remember where she taught, but like Camarillo or something like that, or Thousand Oaks or something. And his younger sister, Heidi, was a beautiful ballerina, and she took ballet where I took ballet, which was Ballet La Jeunesse in Toluca Lake, which is now the secondhand like store. It's like a Goodwill, but not a, you know, like that. It's my studio. So when I go, I will sometimes wander by and just look at inside because it still has our ballet floor, and I danced there for years at Ballet La Jeunesse. And it was Natalie Claire, who had come from Ballet Russe de Monte Carlo. And she was just an incredible teacher. And because Heidi took there, Patrick Swayze's sister, Patrick was like, I'll come and teach jazz, because Natalie said, we want some jazz classes for our ballerinas. And he's like, I'll come and teach jazz. And he pulled up on that motorcycle in his tight jeans. And we were all just like, at 13, just like, oh my God. And he would teach in his jeans, and he would like move his hips like that. Oh my God. We were in love. I mean, can you imagine?
No one hotter.
Pubescent 13-year-old girls. Just
oh my God.
Fireworks going off. Yeah. And what a sweetheart. What a sweet, sweet guy. And then I danced in this really, it was the Oscars that got like panned, but there was a whole sequence at the beginning called I Want to Be an Oscar Winner that was choreographed by Kenny Ortega. And I had just done Dirty Dancing, the series. And so Kenny had me do that too. And Patrick was, he was presenting, and I saw him backstage, and he was like, and I said, Patrick, it's Melora Hardin. He was like, Melora. I mean,
he remembered.
He and his wife, Lisa, totally both remembered me and gave me big hugs. And were just, oh my God. Just like, you know, when that happens, you just are like, really? You remember me?
Well, and how weird and full circle that you played Baby in the Dirty Dancing TV show after him being your teacher. And also, I just want to encourage listeners, if they haven't seen that clip that you're talking about from the Oscars, was it the Rob Lowe hosted Oscars?
Yes, it was.
There's the clip of that, of what you're talking about, where it's all of these young stars singing about wanting an Oscar. Like, it's
Chad
incredible.
Lowe, yeah. Matt Lattanzi, Savion Glover, some really incredible talent, actually. Yeah, it's really, really great.
It's wild to watch. It's on YouTube.
Okay.
I guess I don't have much more time with you, so I'm just going to throw out some roles and maybe like the first thing that comes to mind, real quick sentence or a couple words.
Yes.
17 again.
Well, Zac Efron.
Yeah.
He's just gorgeous. He's such a sweetheart. I remember saying to Zac Efron, like, if I was your age and I was you'd be in a lot of trouble.
I remember seeing that movie opening night.
I'm not sure. I don't know if Zach would like this, but Zach said, "Oh, you don't have to be my age."
There you go. That sounds like
that's a good sentence from 17 again.
27 Dresses, which I just rewatched recently.
James Marsden. You see a theme here yet?
Oh my God. And James Marsden, Melora, I don't know if you're watching him in that new Jury Duty show, but he's the most handsome man ever.
He is so gorgeous. And again, I think I like the gorgeous, really sweet ones. I mean, both Zach and James, so grounded, so earthy, so lovely. Yeah. Both
Gilmore Girls.
Well, Amy Paladino. Because Amy and I danced together. She used to take ballet with me at Ballet La Jeunesse, which we just talked about. And just, wow, what a powerhouse Amy is. What a creative powerhouse.
The dialogue on that show did you have a lot of, was it a crazy dialogue? Because I know that shows sometimes always had like these big monologues. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was a lot. Yeah, but I like that.
Hannah Montana, the movie.
Just Miley Cyrus coming into her own and, finding herself, like that was sort of her last sort of hurrah as an actress before she sort of started becoming a pop star and moving into that world, and just her work ethic and hard worker, so talented. And Taylor Swift was also on
the right
formed, and you know, she wasn't yet Taylor Swift as we know her now, and Kurt came in her bus and was a little bit shy. And so, yeah, those were both sort of nice memories to see those two budding pop stars in their young years.
Yeah. The hot chick, a weird one. Yeah. Do you remember the hot chick?
Rachel McAdams. But the thing I remember is it was Rachel's. I just saw Rachel at the premiere of Dear God, It's Me, Margaret. Wonderful movie. You should all see it.
I'm so excited. The Judy Blume. Based on the book. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, just so charming. Just, for so many reasons. Rachel's first movie, I played her mother. She's now playing the mother in Dear God, Dear God, Are You There, God?
Are You There, God? Yeah.
Let me try and say it right.
She's incredible.
Incredible. And I guess the thing I remember most about the hot chick is that I was, my first daughter, Rory, who is now 21, was about 2 months old when I did that movie. And when I went in to read for that movie, they called my agent. They said, "We really want Melora to play the part. And we would love her not to lose any of her baby weight," which I was thrilled about because I was breastfeeding and I was just a little more voluptuous and they liked it for the character. And I was like, well, good. Because I'm not planning on it. Like I was like, I'm a natural mama. I'm not going to be like, you know, going on a starvation diet. Thank you very much. I'm going to just be what I am. And they loved it. And they were just adorable. And she was adorable. I loved Rachel. And I loved that my baby was there with me, like the whole thing. And I'm just like doing a scene and breastfeeding Rory and doing a scene and breastfeeding Rory.
Incredible. And Anna Faris is in that too. And she's funny and everything.
She's fabulous too. Yeah. Fabulous.
I quickly do want to recommend there's a new Judy Blume documentary that's going to be on Amazon. I got to see it early and like, it's so good. And her work is just incredible. Yes. Melora, I know I got to let you go. Can you tell everyone about Clock, which is going to be on Hulu April 28th? I got a chance to see it. And I mean, I don't know. I think a lot of the themes that we've touched on here in this interview and so much of your work, it's I don't know. You do stuff that feels, like you said, slightly ahead of its time. Tell me about this, or tell listeners, because they haven't seen it.
When they sent the script to me, I really did feel like it was kind of a feminist take on the pressure that women can feel around having children or not having children from peers, from family, from society. It was a very fresh take on that. And I'm sort of just the diametric opposite. I was like dreaming about being a mother from the time I was like 5 years old. I thought I was going to have six kids. I love being a mother. It's probably one of my favorite. It's my favorite role in life. But I think that this was a really interesting take that I felt was important to start having this conversation. And I also felt like Alexis Jacknow, the writer-director, really had a unique, strong point of view that was fresh and different. And to me, I like when art sparks conversation. And to me, it sparks conversation. Totally. It sparks some thought. Yeah.
Yeah. After I watched it with my boyfriend and afterwards, we were just talking about, having kids and that whole conversation that the movie sparked. I felt like we had a really interesting conversation. So I want to encourage everyone to check it out. April 28th. Melora, the last two questions I ask all of my guests are your favorite Mariah Carey song. And then also, if you were choosing for People Magazine Sexiest Man Alive, who would you choose?
Okay. Well, I can do the second one first because, People Magazine Sexiest Man Alive to me, because he's my celebrity crush, is Daniel Day-Lewis. I just think but it's because I'm just so turned on by his talent.
He's so talented.
He just floors me and everything he ever does. And I got to meet him when we won our second SAG award for The Office. Coming off stage, he was coming on to do to present. And he was in the wings, and I'm like, we're all filing off, and he's just got this big smile on his face. And I stopped and I said, "You're Daniel Day-Lewis." And he said, "Yes, I am." And I said, in an Irish accent, and I said, "Oh, I just love your work. I love your work so much." And he was like, "Thank you. I love your work." And I was like, I can go home and die now.
I love it.
Then the first one, the Mariah Carey, her Christmas song, of course, it would be mine. That would be
a classic. Yeah. A classic. Melora, it's such a pleasure to get to talk to you. I have to wrap this up, but I am such a huge fan of your work. So thank you for everything you've given us. And I can't wait to see what you do next because I will be watching.
Thank you.
Thank you, Melora. Have a great day.
You too. Bye. Bye.
I love decorating the house and getting furniture, but sometimes it could be overwhelming to design a space. And so luckily I'm here to tell you about a company called Cozy. Now Cozy is fantastic, a North American company that thoughtfully designs furniture made for modern living. Now Cozy strives to provide the best furniture shopping experience with elegant, super high quality products, plus fast delivery and easy assembly, which is really important to me because I do not like putting together furniture. So the easier, the better for me. Now Cozy offers beautiful, customizable sofas and sectionals that are made to adapt in time. This means customers can add seats to the sofas over time. Maybe if you're extending your family, you might want more space on the couch. Cozy also offers a great range of coffee tables, washable rugs, wall shelving, credenzas, TV stands, and accessories. So much. It's thoughtfully designed furniture made for modern living. There's an outdoor sofa and tables collection that is fantastic. It's called the Mistral. So you can choose the perfect sofa configuration for your outdoor setup. Cozy also opened its first retail space on Queen Street in Toronto to push the experience to the next level and allow customers to engage physically with the products. So transform your living space today with Cozy. Visit cozy.com, spelled C-O-Z-E-Y, to start customizing your furniture today. Again, that's Cozy, C-O-Z-E-Y.com.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.